Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian.
I have had the great privilege, honor, and opportunities in this I call my personal journey through space, time, and other regions of reality and non-reality, of being with, studying with, learning from, having fun with, and living with thousands of other people and creatures who are not human. And through this journey of mine, I have met extraordinary people and ordinary people. In this episode of Natural Solutions with Dr. J, because it is my podcast and I get to choose who I interview, well, of course, there's a certain self-selection on their part as well. Some people don't want to be interviewed. But in this particular episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing Julian Haar, a man who is what I consider to be scientist, a visionary, and a very creative artist who, like most artists, puts a lot of himself into his artwork. As he states in this interview, he has had the great privilege to do his artwork for more than 45 years. And knowing him, I've experienced the wide range of art medium he has used. He has refined his skill set with a primary medium over this long time period of wood carving. Carving wood, also with the use of machinery to cut and shape his pieces, as well as painting or using the natural colors of the wood. But he's also done a very large paper artwork, as well as oil or acrylic painting. So in this particular episode of Natural Solutions with Dr. J, we were sitting on a couch in the living room of his studio in Phoenix, with Scottsdale, Arizona, and with the movie Contact, starring Jodie Foster in it, going on in the background as a part of a series of Halloween-associated movies. We talked about Julian's perception of what the world consists of based on his overall, a very deep understanding of science and art. So let's go ahead and jump into this interview. I hope you enjoy it. No, there is some language that would be offensive to some people, some of which I have edited out, but mostly left in. But it certainly gives you a different perspective on the underlying ideas that form core beliefs or concepts within the body, mind, and spirit of the artist who produces these amazing pieces of art, which are also included in the blog post. So you can see what this three-dimensional art is that he is producing, that is his attempt to describe some new creativity and his idea of what consciousness may be.
Hitting that tree bounces off the tree and hits your retina. Your retina, your brain already has information of what a tree looks like before you even see it. If you've never seen a tree before in your life, that's a different state of consciousness that you already have imprinted with what a tree looks like. And when you see a tree, or maybe a brand new kind of tree, but here's the bugaboo. When you look at the tree, you collapse information about that tree, and that collapsing of the information about that tree is consciousness.
Right. Right.
But that's just language. It's actually a nonsensical statement. It's like, what the fuck did he just say? I mean, what the hell is consciousness? And nobody knows what consciousness is, but here's the bugaboo. Physicists refuse to discuss it. A physicist will discuss anything. There's no taboo, except for one word, and that's consciousness. Except they already have, and guess what? How they admitted it by the back door. When they said in Bell's theorem, that experiment, that observer affected the outcome, they made a philosophical statement, because Einstein called that whole process spooky action at a distance. It's in his writings. He refused to discuss the whole experiment. It was called the EPR experiment, that they shot one photon going that way and shot one photon going that way.
Opposite directions.
And faster than the speed of light, one became a wave, one became a particle. It's called parity in physics.
Okay.
But philosophers and scientists have to start talking and sort out what is this thing about quantum mechanics being insane, but the math isn't. And that's because, like Schrodinger's cat, where the cat is either dead or alive at the same time in the box. When you open the box, all the probabilities that are infinite collapse, and the cat is either dead or alive, whichever one you decide it is. And so scientists say, "This is good. This isn't science. This is Halloween time. This is nuts." But when Dirac and Max Planck and Heisenberg and Niels Bohr all came up with the mathematics for quantum theory, how they come up with the mathematics before they even did the experiments. So they said, oh, we have this theory. Here's the mathematics. We've got to make some experiments to prove that the mathematics, the theory is right. So they have to invent the machines to prove the theory. So actually they've collapsed what they're looking at by making the tool that gives them the results that they were looking for. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
And still, that's all nuts.
Yeah.
Except for one thing. The mathematics was always right. And for 80 years, they tried to disprove Einstein's theory about gravity waves. And now they just saw a gravity wave. It was two pings. That was last month.
Two pings?
Two pings. They have a laser that's 12 miles long, and it's aimed at a mirror. And then inside this mirror is 100,000 gallons of liquid argon.
Huh.
And the gravity wave went bing, bing. So he said, fine, Einstein was right. There are gravity waves. And I'm thinking, maybe two pings isn't enough for me. I mean, I want more than two pings. But see, scientists are still making machines to measure the mathematics to prove the mathematics is right.
Right.
So if that isn't a philosophy, what the hell is?
Mm. Yeah, well, definitely the scientific method is to be able to test the theory, have a theory.
That's right.
And create a model that you can test, and then
that's
you see
right.
if the results come out
that's,
that agree with the theory.
And then time and again, the theory is right because the mathematics, but here's the rub. Where did the math come from? Because the math is the universe.
Oh.
And how you can prove that is music. Every human being on this planet is born with a knowledge of mathematics. How can you say that? Because every human being on this planet loves music. Many, many, many play music every day. Many, many know how to play an instrument to play music.
Yeah.
So this instrument that plays the music is just like the EPR experiment or the Hadron and the Fermi accelerator in Batavia, Illinois.
Huh.
It's a giant donut
right.
magnet, and they uh-huh. spin this. Well, the violin's the same thing. Here I go, I'm playing. Well, I just invented this tune. Nobody's ever heard it before. I just thought of it. And everybody says, Bach, Mr. Bach, that's great. That's fantastic. It's three blind mice played forward and backwards and upside down because he could do that. It's called a loop.
Huh.
And he could do, when you listen to a Bach fugue, you're listening to the same notes played forward, back, sideways, upside down, however you want to cut it.
Huh.
Because it's mathematics. Music, exactly, those are notations.
Yeah.
When the musician looks at those,
the notes,
so C,
the
G, F sharp, C sharp.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell is that? Well, it's a tone.
It's a frequency.
And it's a frequency, and the tone has intervals, just like in a Fibonacci.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
Just like...
And harmonics and disharmonics.
All that. Yeah. Same kind of language you use in what is called Fourier transforms. And Fourier mathematics describes the movement of atoms inside a gas.
Okay.
In other words, you can connect all that.
Uh-huh.
Mathematicians understand it. Laymen go, that's over my fucking head.
Yeah.
But not when you use analogies like music is mathematics.
Uh-huh.
Most people don't know that music is mathematics. They don't think about it in those terms.
They hear
the music. They don't know they're talking about intervals and they're talking about dissonance.
True.
And they're talking about time, which is the beat of the drum. A metronome that goes like this.
Yeah.
And then you put the melody on top of the time, and on top of the melody is what do you call it, going up and down?
The amplitude?
Amplitude, and you go from that into all of these dynamics taking turns.
Yes.
Each person gets, okay, you, drummer, you hit it.
Right.
And he gets the lead, and everybody lays low. Around the drummer and all
that.
You can go on and on and on. It's the same in quantum mechanics, is these collapsing all these moments, is each time you collapse it, something different happens because it's to an artist, it's very playful. The first thing you realize about music is very playful.
Yeah.
Kids at a young age go, I really like that. Three blind mice. The kids at an early age learn to sing tunes even before they learn how to do extended conversation.
Very true.
But I'm trying to make carvings now. Some of those carvings out in that room.
Uh-huh.
It's the first breakthrough I've had in years because I've had writer's block for years. I'm going to keep making the same fucking image over and over again. Different versions. but I think I'm onto something. But the problem with art, and I guess some sciences, is it's its own language. You can't, suppose you asked me in an interview to describe that piece.
Yes.
Oh, it's got a bunch of wigglies up there, and the head's got a hole in it, and there's a weird look, and he's got a penis.
It's like
wiggly.
It's a monkey on the monkey's back. What's it called?
Have you really described it?
Yeah.
No. You'd have to be there. Your experience collapsing that would be. I've had people look at that and go, "Give me a break." I guess. What else? Jeez. Some people hate it. Some people respect or like it.
I think it's fantastic. I videotaped it last night in the dark.
Oh yeah.
Well, I put on a. I used a flash.
So the point is that music is a language. Uh-huh. There wouldn't be any way to deny that music is. It performs on every emotional level you can imagine.
Very true.
Intellectually, I wouldn't say Bach was a moron. It performs on so many levels that it's equal to physics in its complexity.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first time I heard the Brandenburg, when I was a kid, the Brandenburg pieces Symphony. By Bach, uh-huh. I said, who is it? Wow. I couldn't even say, how did he do that? I mean, it's just beyond words, but it isn't language. It's its own language. Music is a language. Uh-huh. Just like a Van Gogh painting or a Leonardo's Mona Lisa, describe it? No, I mean, fuck, I'll read.
Right, the name
itself
is just
pretty good.
Yeah.
But when you see it, you don't need it because that's the language.
Yes.
The painting
the
itself.
Painting itself
is the language.
Is the statement.
Beyond language is a statement.
Right.
But.
Or the message or whatever.
Yeah. Well.
Same thing with your pieces, too.
When a mathematician performs a piece of mathematics that's incredible, the operative word in physics for a mathematical formula that works is called beautiful.
Ah.
Yes, that's... Yeah. If you're a mathematician, I'm one, and I go, look at this, and you go, oh, that's beautiful. And a non-mathematician would say, what the hell does it mean? I mean,
what's going on here?
And if it's... I show it to you, and you go, no, that doesn't work. Change that. Sigma, delta... And then, yeah, you're right. Now it's beautiful. Layman would go, what the hell are they talking about? But that's a whole different... Mathematicians speak a whole different world.
It's a whole different language.
A whole different language, but it's the same... It's the same as what's embedded in music.
All right.
They're both one and the same, but layman have to say, nah, music's
and,
over here.
And so would you say that they're all manifestations of the atoms looking at themselves, like you said in your basic...
Yeah, and the reason I'm forced to think that crazy and use that kind of language is after looking at quantum theory, first of all, how would particles communicate faster than the speed of light? Einstein's, you can't do that. That's a no-no.
Right.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
So that's why he called a spooky action at a distance. This is an experiment. In fact, when you can look it up and type in Bell's theorem, B-E-L-L-S theorem.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, Einstein, and after that, spooky action at a distance.
Okay.
And it'll explain how they ran the experiment. And then one scientist says, the observer... affects the outcome, and you go, what the fuck? How did they do that? How did an observer do that? Well, when you look at the world around you, you're collapsing it all the time. The thing is, most human beings think, you and I both agree that's a table, that's a fan, that's a TV, and on
right. In this room. Uh-huh.
If I want to spend a week describing everything, then you'd say, yeah, he's right, there's a bunch of pictures over there, da da. That's not what's going on. What's really going on, how you felt about what you're looking at. And I'm telling you, not everybody sees the world the same way. And just try living a long life like me. And I can tell you, not everybody sees the same thing when they look at stuff.
Very true.
A visceral difference in how they're maybe not as mundane as coffee tables. But it certainly comes to how you and I would differ in music.
Yeah.
Painting.
Yeah.
Sex.
Yeah.
Clothes you're wearing, maybe. I can go on and infinite. And so let's go beyond the coffee table and that fan and get into the personal, which is what really makes you a human being. is how you feel about life. Makes life interesting is also why consciousness matters to some people. And some people, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
I have met people that they're really smart, but they're kind of brain dead. Because the visceral reaction of the world around them isn't one of giddy and joy like a kid. It's kind of like that's mental health.
It's neutral.
Just like having cancer, they have a kind of, something's happened to their mind where they're just existing.
Uh-huh.
I would say the guy that just killed 50 people with a machine gun qualifies as a non-human. I mean, something, he's not very conscious.
Yeah. Because there's no emotional content
in fact, what he did is so evil, like they wanted to find out what the motive was, and the reason that we want to find out a motive is they can't comprehend somebody doing that. Like,
yeah.
What? And then they couldn't find a motive. And even if they had, would it change anything? No. But human beings have a desperate need to understand, especially events that are monumental. Whether, how did Michelangelo lay on his back and do that? Not even great artists can conceive of laying your back. Ever laid on your back and tried to paint a fresco for 12 hours a day?
No.
I mean, that's a different kind of consciousness.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or Einstein solving the riddle of relativity by saying, well, I don't know how to do the fucking math. All right, I'm riding a light wave. I'm moving faster and faster. Here I go. He actually said in an interview. I'm going faster and faster. What happens? Well, all the trees on each side start to curve over and form a tunnel. And the clock on the wall goes slower and slower the faster I go. Until I'm getting younger while you're getting older. That he said that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Until he finally said, well, I'm going to do the mathematical formula for this. And I'm thinking, well, that's getting close to genius. I mean, can I do that? Fuck no. I mean, and then so he wrote it all down, and a lot of scientists say, you're crazy, Einstein. I mean, shame on you for being crazy.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be a mathematician.
The most logical, yeah.
And so they did an experiment to see if this star would appear around the sun, and its light waves would get bent. They had to wait, I don't know how many years, to prove Einstein's special theory of relativity. They said, look at that, the light waves are being bent. They could see it at the telescope. I'm just saying, people take for granted that looking at the world has nothing to do with consciousness. Whatever consciousness is, nobody even knows what it is.
Right.
But whatever it is, we know what it's not. The guy killing 50 people is not consciousness.
Yeah.
Einstein definitely is consciousness. So that's a good beginning.
Yeah.
For a subject that's so nebulous you can't put your mind around it. So
like that middle piece out in the studio that we talked about, there's a label having to do with consciousness on it.
Yeah, consciousness made visible, because it's the first piece I've done in a while where I'm impressed by my own work. But now I'm working on a new piece. I started drawings for a new piece, and it'll be good.
When I was driving back here, I was thinking, you know, sometimes when I get, like, maybe I'm doing acupuncture, and there's a certain place when I have acupuncture needles in myself, and all of a sudden I get into this meditative state. There's like purples and blues, and then there are all these just kind of patterns that go on. And I was thinking, his sculpture looks like some of the patterns I have in that state of consciousness, where my whole being is becoming more cohesive and more internal. And then I said, oh, okay, I understand how that could be a good label on that piece, because it fits my internal life.
Well, I carved that in 2 days on acid.
Wow.
And I had acid to what is called, I don't know if you ever heard of Sandoz Laboratories.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Sandoz in Switzerland. Came up, I don't know, accidentally or on purpose.
No, it was Albert. It was Albert Hoffman.
Albert Hoffman. It was Sandoz Laboratories.
It was Sandoz Labs. Yeah.
I had access.
LSD-25.
Chemist I knew.
The 25th.
I knew a chemist who actually had access to the real thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The street acid was dangerous to get, and not always in the nun, or else you'd hit it and you'd get some good. I had the good stuff.
Yeah.
So for 2 years, I put on, let's see, Mozart and Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks, and carve. And I did a whole series of carvings that were meant. I made a breakthrough. But at the same time I couldn't carve, I would just walk around and think. And my King Kong Studios was 5,000 square feet of oak flooring. It used to be a factory.
And this is Chicago.
In Chicago on Halsted.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this wood floor, and patterns appeared, and they were so similar to the patterns in Middle Eastern rugs, Persian rugs. I said, my, that's curious. That's real. I wish I could remember that and draw them on my art. And I couldn't memorize them. I saw them and they disappeared from my consciousness. But you have to realize that when you see atoms, whatever in the fuck we're talking about, that we're using pretty goofy stuff, the first thing that atoms form are patterns.
Okay.
After the Big Bang, the first thing the atoms did was look for hang out with other atoms.
Right.
But it had to be below, I don't know how many billions, from billions of degrees to millions of degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
Some threshold. Scientists have this threshold. They can mathematically diagram it. It would take 12 billion years for it to cool off even enough to produce the Earth and consciousness made visible, because you can't have life unless it's a certain critical mass.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Couldn't do it on Jupiter.
So literally a mass, meaning the mass, the scientific mass.
The point
like
is, when you
that.
Speak about evolution in high school, you're thinking about Darwin and what is called morphology.
Uh-huh.
The morphology has to do with matter.
Yeah.
And living matter. Everything living on this planet, according to Darwin, has gone through evolution. Sometimes the dinosaurs 165 million years and it's all over. They say a giant asteroid hit, and I say bullshit. If it wiped out all the dinosaurs, how come it didn't wipe out everything living? It just left mice. So they said it left. You've heard that whole story about the asteroid.
No.
Oh. But I'm saying that the atoms after the Big Bang went looking for other atoms.
Okay.
And
can you hold that thought just 1 second? Because I have to pull out needles from from Paula.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Better pull them out before she goes nuts.
The official line remains a cautious one.
You're asking me when we'll find out what the purpose of that machine is. Well, you're asking me when we'll find out what the purpose of that machine is. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next year, maybe never.
Liberty Mutual saved us almost $800 loose with our auto and home insurance.
Liberty did what?
Yeah, they saved us a ton, which gave us a little wiggle room in our budget. Wish our insurance did that. Then we could get a real babysitter instead of your brother.
Hey, welcome back. Best guy, right?
Yes.
Elvin.
You could save $782 when Liberty stands with you. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Okay. So evolution doesn't have anything to do with living things. It has to do with everything.
Oh.
Inanimate
so
matter, rocks,
not simply living things, it's everything.
Everything in the universe, because Adam has to start butting up with other atoms. And so after billions of years, we go from star stuff to matter. Some of the planets are pretty rocky. Jupiter is pretty hot. This planet's just right, as they say in fairy tales. You know, the three bears are just right here. But what's curious about physics, why I think it's a dead end, you can't have one theory and leave out another theory. Here's the point.
Huh.
So far, it's been reductionism.
Right.
Get your mind around reductionism. The accelerator is getting bigger and bigger and more powerful. I don't know how many billions of electron volts they have now. They've smashed their way into that motherfucker. I peeled away that like the Russian dolls one side and side and side. Then I got the quark and the Higgs boson, and I don't know how many they discovered because I'm not a scientist. But they smashed their way into, and they've got a pretty good handle on electrons and photons and antiprotons and quarks and Higgs boson. And I forget all the words. I used to have them all memorized.
So the,
but there's one problem.
Yeah.
They need more power.
Yeah, exactly.
They need more power to get their way in there.
Right,
they, want
right.
to, they want to understand the universe,
so what
but
is
except
it
for one thing.
What are they smashing? hydrogen atoms?
I don't know if they're just using what hydrogen, atoms? But the, yeah. Here's the rub.
Yeah.
They aren't smashing their way into an atom. There's no such thing.
Such thing as an atom?
Here's the rub, that little joke on humanity. There's one atom, just like in Heisenberg's theory about when you look at something that makes a choice, there's one atom, which is an illusion, and all atoms. All atoms are the same atom.
Oh.
So it's just like the photon communicating with the other photon faster than the speed of light. There's one photon and all the rest. But they're all the same. But you can't get your mind around that because it's a nonsensical statement. It doesn't, like, what does that mean? Like, there's, you're smashing your way into one atom, but actually you're smashing your way into all atoms. Because it's an illusion. It's the biggest illusion you can imagine. Yeah. All atoms are communicating with all atoms because everything in the universe is one. What's that old saying? All for one and one for all from the Three Musketeers. the atom is actually all the atoms.
Yeah.
And that photon communicating another photon is himself looking at himself. It's all one thing, but separate.
Yeah.
So at the same time.
It's sort of talking about the illusion of an individual.
It's like an unbelievable paradox.
Yeah.
All the photons, all the atoms, everything that mankind imagines, everything's made up out of.
Yeah.
It's all one, and one for all.
Yeah.
You're looking at one atom, but actually you're looking at all atoms.
Uh-huh.
Because they're all the same.
Yeah.
But they're all communicating with each other. But that's a completely insane statement. Like, how are they doing that? Well, you'll find out sooner or later.
In the next episode.
Because you're made out of, if you think human beings are going to stop doing this, you're crazy. They're going to keep, I don't know how much more power they need to smash until they find nothing. Is their idea actually to get to the, okay, we don't have to smash any organs, nothing's there. You know, we did it. We named all of them. Now we know how the thing works because we found them all.
Right.
Well, you mean all those things.
All the subatomic particles.
See, Max Planck said there's not anything more than 23 zeros doesn't exist.
Oh. Huh.
23 zeros.
So
and so
is
that arbitrary? Is that arbitrary? Or like all the other mathematical formulas, it's true, but who in the hell, how did he ever come up with it? Why not 20 zeros?
Yeah.
23 zeros, or anything smaller than that, I'll agree with you, Max. Anything smaller than 23 zeros doesn't exist. How can you go along with that shit? You know, it's just like saying that photons are communicating with each other faster than the speed of light. Einstein says, oh shit, give me a break, that's spooky accident. Action at a distance, just like Halloween time. And so he moves on with all of his brilliant thinking. And he doesn't need to dwell on spooky action at a distance. That could be a throwaway line for any great scientist. But the thing is, he predicted gravity waves. How could he predict it? Can't find them, can't see them. Gravity waves, and what gravity waves is so small they can't even find it, see it, because it went bing, bing, and a bunch of fluid. Okay, I'll let you have that one. Put it in your formula, and add that to your formula of looking at nothing. Because if they snatch their way, now first of all, what could be smaller than an atom? Okay, how small is an atom? Minus. How many zeros is that minus? Say they're talking about nothing, almost nothing, because as a layman, I can't get my mind wrapped around looking at nothing. They've smashed their way with huge... These magnets are so powerful, I think, that they're dangerous to walk around. They tear the atoms in your body apart.
Yeah, so the magnets, essentially they create magnets and they send current through the magnets accelerate a particle fast enough to smash into something.
Almost the speed of light.
Almost the speed.
And when they hit another particle, they smash away in, and they, if you look at the
Are they both going
X-ray,
opposite directions, though? Or is it actually fixed somewhere?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. I don't know why I don't remember more, but... They look at this thing, it looks like an x-ray of your body.
Oh, that's right.
They look at the x-ray, and it looks like this.
A spiral.
Spiral, and another spiral, and then a line, and then you look at that and say,
and stuff like
we saw one, we just saw one. Fuck, smash your way into the next level. We're going to get another look closer here. And I said, what are you looking at? Like, what the fuck are you looking at? And because I left this trail on a photographic page, he said, we can see that.
So these are, because you read Scientific American.
Yeah, I read it all the time. I have all my life. Just saying, I don't understand what the hell.
But that's where you see some of this. It's not like a YouTube video about.
No, and it's all of this. I've been following in Scientific American all my life.
Exactly.
How they're going on about this. And I said, how can I put this in my art?
Yeah.
And they'll say, Harry, you can't put that shit in your art. I mean, what would it look like? I mean, it's one thing to say you're going to paint or carve a beautiful woman. I mean, keep at it until you get something going.
Right.
Rodin was pretty good at carving. Michelangelo carved pretty good.
A marble.
But they're not saying make a carving about an atom. Oh, shit, give me a break. I mean, I decided to make that figure, the solar system at the top.
At the top.
Has ball bearings. That's the only beginning I could think of. Like, make something that shows people what you're thinking about, and so you're going to spin that, and it's got ball bearings. You go, oh, look at that.
So there's a solar system.
It's a silly idea and a silly carving in the sense that whatever we're talking about doesn't say any of that, but it's a pretty good beginning, at least trying.
Yeah.
And successful in that people like it. I like it.
So I mean, in one of my Facebook postings with a video of some of your pieces, I said you're a scientist, visionary artist. But you are. You came from a scientific background. And how many artists really come from a physics background?
That doesn't qualify me. No, I don't have a scientific
background. You don't
think
so?
No, but I'm a pretty good artist.
You have a math background?
A little bit.
And physics? Like in college, weren't you?
You know what 50 years does to your mind when you think about nothing but carving wood? I'm a fucking termite as far as being any good at anything else. I have are these crazy ideas after trying to understand what they're doing. And I have some strong opinions, like reductionism is a dead end.
Yeah.
They got to go the opposite way, which I call symbiosis, symbiotic behavior. Okay, if you want to find out what I'm talking about, type in lichens.
Oh,
L-I-C-H-E-N-S. Type that in. There's scientists writing about their symbiotic behavior and saying it's the next big breakthrough in science. Huh. Not botany.
Oh.
I think I'd call that botany.
Yeah, it would be botany.
But that's not what they're saying.
Because it's plant.
They're saying it defies a lot of rules. I'm not sure which botanical rules.
Huh.
But you have to understand that all the sciences are now talking to each other. 100 years ago, you were a biologist, you were over there. You're a botanist, get over in that line there.
Huh.
But now they're all sharing information saying, oh, we can use what you're doing and what we're doing. How are you going to do that? Well, if you can take an electron microscope and look at what's happening inside a cancer cell, this is what I just read, you'll see that every living thing, even at that microscopic level, has a certain outline, a pattern. And they go looking for another pattern they can fit into, like a lock.
Right.
And if they can't get in there and make a lock, then they ignore each other. And the way to defeat the cancer cell is to make a AIDS virus, which is really an aggressive virus.
Oh, yeah, retrovirus.
It is to disable and insert a gene and send that virus into the human body and put a missing gene. So a person with an epileptic gene gets that missing gene and that they can find it on his bar. Say, oh, it's number 23.
Uh-huh.
Whatever I'm talking about. I don't know what that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Number 23, okay. Science fiction, you bet. They're doing it now. But the rub is it costs $450,000. So you can have this new design. If you have this missing chromosome, is that the word?
Chromosome? It could be a missing chromosome or a missing gene.
Missing gene.
Yeah.
But they got that idea from electron microscope, which was used to look at atoms originally, or maybe it was look at horses' hooves.
Electron microscope looks at...
It goes back to the 30s, by the way. It's been around a long time.
And even before that was the light microscope that was so sensitive that they stained different cells and all, and
that's
they actually discovered some cures for cancer that would cause the cell to go into a dormant state because of the colors. And so they created these machines that would match the color of the stain.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, it's live microscope.
So life obeys a lot of different parameters. Right. It also obeys that your shape is your destiny. If your key, your whole, literally a lock and key. If the like virus can't find a way in,
right,
you won't get sick.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, no matter what you look at, biology, botanists, physicists communicate with each other, and they used to be kind of arrogant, like, oh, you're nothing but a botanist. Get over there. We're physicists. We're smashing our way into the universe. But they talk to each other now. But artists aren't.
Artists aren't talking to each other.
Artists are making nothing but junk now. Most of the shows I see internationally, I look at the art and I say, this is political diarrhea. I mean, there's no there. It's getting worse and worse. So artists are hardly even talking to each other. But some of them, like Jeff Koons and Damien Hirst, are making millions and millions. Damien Hirst made a skull encrusted in $1 million worth of diamonds, and somebody bought it. And
half a million?
a lot of silliness that going on. Thing. Good for you, Damien. I mean, I'm glad you're world famous. I mean, wow, what the fuck? Oh, he's the one that put tanks filled with formaldehyde and put a goat carcass in it. You never heard of that sculpture?
No.
Yeah, he's famous for doing things like that. But,
And so the sciences, to understand the meaning or the emotional content of it, I would have to either ask him or I would have to just
Well, if you ask him,
myself.
He'd give you a whole day.
Yeah.
And it would all sound, he's probably gifted linguistically, he's probably a monster. But art-wise, I'm just saying the science is great. I mean, it's really a lot of action.
Uh-huh.
As far as the arts, there's a bunch of junk out there passing off as great art. And a lot of people that have greatest gift of gab known to mankind and going, wow, I mean, so he's a genius, huh? And I look at the art and go, sorry, no cigar. I mean, that's great speech. In fact, there's a famous book called, what's it called? The Thomas Wolfe. Not Thomas Wolfe. Who's the guy that wears a white suit? And Wolfe wrote a book about the painted word. I don't know if it's called the painted word, something about how New York art critics created a whole new language to describe non-art.
That's great. I don't know the book. But. Well, this is fascinating. So do you think that that you've always had sort of this desire to somehow put science into your artwork, or was there a particular shift at some point?
Well, you know, what are you going to do? You're home, you're in your studio all day long. So for 45 years, you're in this room and going, I'm carving away. I hope I get an idea pretty soon. And so you think about a lot of things, and you think about women and screwing. You think about, or I get some booze or drugs, or I'm going to get some money, or I hope I marry somebody rich. Or all day long you're going, all these thoughts, and you want some of the thoughts to have some meaning instead of what everybody else is thinking. You're not going to make any art unless you get some ideas, and you say, how do you get ideas? Well, you have to learn how to think.
Huh.
And that'll get you somewhere. And then, well, how do you learn how to think? And then, well, you look at people who are thinking.
Huh.
I mean, it's kind of like empirical thinking. Yeah. Well, who do you like that's thinking that you might get an idea from? Einstein? No, I'm not going to get him. I'm not going to make any carving in theory of relativity, but he's interesting, somebody to admire. And eventually you do see somebody, or hear somebody, read somebody, where it sets off a series of events in your own head, and an image comes up. And the image comes from nowhere, but actually everywhere. It's like a meme. It's like an idea that's been traveling around. You go, well, I'm not the first person to have this idea. It's been circulating for a whole year or hundreds of years. And you hang your hat on that. It's called, the Chinese call it the traveling dragon. And so that's why if you look at Buddha and you say, Well, you know, I mean, I'll hang my hat on that.
Uh-huh.
And after a few years, you get a bunch of these memes together and things start clicking and you get better at what you do. Whatever it is you're doing, you know, what the hell you're doing, you're like a fool in paradise. I mean, I doubt if Van Gogh said, here I am, I'll be famous someday. Nobody wants this shit now. But I'm really having a ball. But, oh, wait a second, I cut off my ear for a minute and then I would just go back painting and this woman loves me. But no, she doesn't really love me. I'll cut off my other ear. But I'm just saying, nobody knows what it is until they see it. And that is true in the arts. But if the person's already dead and they still like it, something's happened that is marvelous. So if they like it when the person's dead even more than when they were alive, and when they were alive, nobody even wanted the shit, but now they'll give you $80 million for it, something fantastic happened, but nobody knows what it was. What is it? Well, here's the goddamn painting. Look at the painting. You tell me what you think. Well, he cut off his ear. Jesus, that's tragic. I mean, that's the first thing most people think. I think that's bullshit.
You mean in the picture?
I'm just saying, every time I read an article on him, they always say he cut off his ear. Oh, they have to say that.
Right.
You know, and very few people read about Einstein and realize that his idea was to see it, not do the math. And he called them thought experiments. Like riding the light wave. He couldn't get get going. He tried to figure a way to think of something. Before him, nobody, EMC square.
Right.
When scientists looked at that, they said, oh my God, this is unbelievable. How did he get there?
Yeah.
He said, well, I got on a light wave and I wrote it.
Yeah.
And as I wrote, all these things happened. And so he wrote down the math. Where in the fuck did the math come from? Well, literally out of nowhere or out of everywhere behind him, 500 years from Newton until him, he could look at Newton's equations and, like me studying with David Nivall, say, well, here's how you carve a hand and here's the human body, here's a Bukhar, read the fucker, and you'll figure it out unless you're stupid. And after a few years, it's comes together, but still, I made nothing but trash for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. I literally copied everybody I get my. Well, you learn a lot by stealing.
That's right.
You know, learn a lot. And then maybe you reach a dead end. Most artists reach a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Very few artists make good art. There must be millions of artists in this country. Most of it is junk.
Yeah.
Now and then you see something and go, wow, look at that. You know, like Paul and I both know John Wenger, who out of nowhere started making these paintings for 20 years that were some of the finest paintings in the country. Then he started making mud, painting mud, literally
mud,
painting paint that thick on the canvas that said nothing, and painting that thick on the floor, and
it's like an inch or two
thick. And Waterman said in the end people had to carry the paintings out, took four people to lift the paintings. That's what she said. But eventually you start making art, or you don't. You succeed or fail. But you don't know until other people tell you that you're all right, you're doing good. Then you say, wow, okay, I'll keep going, and people say I'm doing good.
So you need that kind of external validation or something?
No, that's only one part of a whole. I have met artists that didn't give a shit who told them they were good or bad. They were going to keep going. In a way, I was.
Yeah.
I'd have been doing this so many years, I can't imagine doing anything else.
Yeah.
But in a way, nobody was going to stop me. But actually, on acid, I kept this one phrase over and over. I was carving for hours and hours. I'd say, I'll show them, I'll show them. It's part of my weird personality. It's like, I'll show who? Show who what? But I kept saying it for years, I'll show them. Because you get some encouragement when you first start, but not that much encouragement and not any money.
Yeah.
And sometimes they won't even buy it.
Right.
And sometimes when you offer to give it to them, they go, no, like Dracula, you know, and Garlic, go, no, no, I have no room in my house, and they run. But you just can't get your mind wrapped around it. Around why would you make art? There's no money in it. And then you start getting a strange complex, strange personality where you start to, I don't know, you get a little bit too angry for your own good. And I have a little bit of anger in me. It comes out all the time. But you start getting weird personality traits. And so adding to everything else, you have to say, you have to invent a personality is your private psychiatrist. And I call mine Mr. Intelligence. So you have to monitor your own behavior so you don't go mad, don't go crazy, and be careful of booze and be careful of this, don't do that. You got to stay together if you want to keep carving. Otherwise, you won't be able to carve because you will go crazy. Because there's a lot of you don't even have to be an artist to go nuts.
That's for sure.
And you have to invent any program you get your mind wrapped around to keep your mental health together, because you're the only one who can do it.
Yeah,
I've been to see a psychiatrist. You know what he told me?
No.
He said, keep being anxious. It's in your art.
Does he have like a whole museum of your art?
No, Paul said that I had to go see the psychiatrist, and we talked for a few days, and he said, you certainly are interesting. And he said, keep being anxious, it's in your art. Because I kept showing him my photos, hoping I could sell him something.
Right, exactly.
And he knew that's what I was trying to
do. The consummate promoter, you have to.
He handled the photographs like they were dynamite. These are really nice. And so we parted ways. I don't know if Paula was paying him or was free or not.
You didn't start seeing a lot of your pieces in his office?
I didn't see him that much. Oh. I don't know if I saw him more than twice or three times. Huh. I was trying to find a way out. I was hoping to please Paula so she'd get off my back. But that was the only... I wanted to see more psychiatrists so I'd get some drugs. But like I say, with the machines and the tools, the drugs are... I'm surprised I didn't injure myself doing all that acid all the time in carving. But, boy, some of those machines can cut off a lemon, lickety-split.
Yeah, the bandsaw and drills.
You think, I'm really high, I'm having such a good time, and all of a sudden, boom, there's my finger on the floor. And I promise I will do my best. Like, Bernie lost one, Bernie Van Marm, one of my friends, lost his index finger running a machine. So.
Because you use some heavy-duty woodworking equipment.
Yeah, they're pretty high speed, pretty dangerous. I've been lucky so far.
There's like drill presses and
you
sanders.
Name it, you
and,
name it, I got it. Yeah. Paula has so far bought me every tool known to mankind. I go through thousands of board feet of wood a year. Because the problem with working wood, I'm working organically, many compound curves. Is that 80% of the wood's on the floor. To get that curve, you have to use up a lot of wood.
Uh-huh.
It's not like making a table. You know,
right,
and
it's square. It's already cut that way. Yeah, lumber is. Huh.
But I think it's interesting what's happening in physics, that they're a dead end. And the dead end wasn't about power in the accelerators. They came from dark matter and dark energy, and they don't know what the fuck it is. They can't find it. They don't know what it is. They can't see it. They just know it's there. So, physics, is that a dead end?
There was the Michio Kaku's book, Hyperspace. It was given to me as a gift when maybe I turned 50, I think. And so I was reading that, and
I know who he is. Paula just gave me one of his books.
Yeah, and it's a great book. There are a lot of equations on there. I just looked at it and go, gee, that's pretty, and I turned the page because it's like I got to a certain point in math when it was like, this isn't easy. I don't get this. And so I just quit doing math. And so they have these formulas, but in the appendix, now at a certain point in school, I started actually appreciating the introductions, the prefaces, and the appendices of certain books.
You've got to understand something, and I'm going to say this once.
Yeah.
There's more than one entryway into the round crystal ball.
Yeah.
Math is only one. Mathematicians are so egotistical, so if you don't understand the math, you'll never be a physicist. Horseshit, bullshit. There's many different ways of thinking besides And not only that, if I gave you Einstein's whole soliloquy about writing a light wave, that's a pretty good example of a brilliant, one of the world's most brilliant scientists solving a problem by thinking in terms of visuals and not math.
Yeah, yeah.
And then inventing the math so he could hang the math on the visualization. And other scientists saying, well, I don't know about the fucking light wave and growing younger and older, but the math is certainly beautiful, and EMC square is world famous.
That is.
So he went from visualization to the most famous equation mankind's ever known, right? Led to the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
But in that equation actually is that the atom is one and many. The atom is actually one atom.
Oh, right.
And all of them at the same time, because they all communicate at the same time. They all do the same thing.
Yeah.
You smash any atom, you smash them all.
Right.
You're looking for an atom that, that is going to give you different Higgs bosons. Lots of luck, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. So they're all one. And all the photons carry information, and all the light waves are all the light. Now, but there are one, you want, you just take, scientists will show you one. You want to see a photon, I'll show you one.
Yeah.
And, but you're looking at all of them. And what the first thing they did after the Big Bang is look for other ones to hook up with to make the periodic table. And a scientist would say, Har, you're really full of shit. I mean, where do you get this? Look at this, the field. There, quantum mechanics is actually field theory, that there's actually no objects, only fields. And you're a field. You don't believe me? You walk next to a radio and watch the radio go crazy. How did you make the radio go crazy? Right. What are you doing giving off a field
that makes the radio fields,
get
right?
static or get louder?
Yeah.
Everything has a field around it.
Electromagnetic fields, which is a principle we use in acupuncture.
Yeah, yeah.
But the needles are like little antennas. That's
and then Eddington comes along before they even have all this, and he says,
Edison,
electricity and magnetism are one and the same.
Oh, yeah.
So other scientists say, you mean the magnet, the bar of magnet with the little filings is the same as electricity? He says, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they say, give me a fucking break. We're not going to give you any Nobel Prize for that. So he says, watch this. He wraps a copper wire around a nail and moves the nail in and out and produces electric spark.
Right.
And they go, wow. So there's a lot of strangeness on the planet.
Uh-huh.
But that's called field theory.
So you were talking about they got to a certain level where they don't have enough energy to study like the dark matter and stuff. Then the back of the appendix of hyperspace, I think it's appendix number one or something, there's this theory by a Russian astrophysicist, the theory of civilizations. And he has five different levels of civilizations. And civilization number one is a civilization where they can predict all phenomena on that planet and control it. It's at a planetary level.
There you go.
They can control weather and everything. And you have to. And so we right now are at a level zero civilization.
Absolutely no interest to me whatsoever. It's all gobbledygook.
But
a whole different school.
Level five is being able to harness so much energy you can change the shape of space and do experiments on black holes.
You don't believe in astrology, do you?
Astrology?
Yeah.
Of course we do.
Somewhat.
All right. See,
it's a form of consciousness.
I know the book.
Hyperspace?
The book you're talking about.
No, it's hyperspace.
Michio
Kaku.
Yeah, but he's
an astrophysicist.
Yeah, I think I've heard you talk before.
I have mentioned that. Because I was so impressed.
If I could only shut you down, because I really, really don't like that language. I don't like that world. It's just mumbo jumbo.
Which one?
Don't even get me started. I'll come out with anger. Don't even start there.
I was just referencing the amount of energy necessary to do certain experiments.
Well, I can top you. I'll give you a book of Eric von Däniken.
I'm not trying to top anything.
I didn't know you would start going down that road just when we were cooking.
Yeah. String theory. That's what it's about.
Oh, I've read a lot of string theory. There's only one trouble with a string vibrating smaller than an atom. Is too many zeros.
Oh, there's more than 23 zeros.
Yeah, string theory I'm very familiar with. I'm glad this finally lost favor. when I first read it, I thought, oh, well, this is interesting, because they needed it to bring together gravity into the standard model.
Yeah.
So that the standard model, anyhow, I thought it was a pretty good attempt, and then it's descended into mumbo jumbo. But whenever, because if Max Planck in 1931 says anything smaller than 23 zeros doesn't exist, I don't know how many zeros they are now with these atom smashers. They're up to 10 billion electron volts, which is enough to light this whole city.
Yeah.
But that string theory is going nowhere. But it was beautiful math, and I didn't understand the math. But mathematicians loved it because of the math. But the theory itself, its description, was all mumbo-jumbo. Huh. But I think in the next 100 years, it'll all shake out. They'll find their way because the atom's looking at the atom. Consciousness is looking at consciousness. But I hope I live enough more years to make one really, really good piece, one really satisfactory piece. And get some money. I want somebody to give me some money. I deserve some money.
I think you should be, your work should be in display, on display, like at the Getty Museum in L.A. and at the Louvre.
I had a museum show at the Santa Fe Museum of Art with Wenger.
Uh-huh.
And Paul and I went to a show I did in Baltimore. What was the name of that museum?
The Visionary Art Museum.
Yeah,
Art Museum.
Yeah, she was a nice lady, and I don't know, did she buy a piece for the museum, or did I give her one? I forget. And I could probably do well with her if I kind of pursued it. Creating and sending art, I don't know. Getting your work out there is exhausting. I came close a few months ago, and then they got rid of the guy who was helping me. He had 9,000 square feet, and I was talking about doing a show. And then they sent me a brochure saying they wanted $2,500 a day to do a show.
Where? Here?
It's called the Unexpected Art Gallery. It sure is unexpected. Oh, my God. Parking space for 8 cars.
Wow.
But I met a really interesting artist that were sidling up to each other. He's a glass blower.
See, a portal, a doorway to another dimension.
I'm glad they found one. Is that one of them? Is
that's
that thing?
It.
Is
no,
that
the portal? Master. She's going to go into that other dimension.
Is that it? Is that the thing over
that's
there?
The thing over there.
Oh, I'd certainly go over there and try and get in. We're in 45%. Oh, is that an airlock so you can go over there?
I don't know.
Is that McConaughey? Is he going
in? I know I've seen this movie decades ago.
If you'd like to learn more about how to get an appointment with Dr. Shortian, please call the Redwood Clinic at 510-849-1176. And for information, go to theredwoodclinic.com. Thank you. To buy your copy of Superbrain, Maximize Your Brain Health for a Better Life, go to superbrain-thebook.com. That's superbrain-thebook.com. Information can also be found on naturalsolutionswithdrj.com.